So you are in the OneDrive for Business SharePoint at the University of Washington. It is a executive track, but we're going to try to make it a lot more useful for a power user as well, and executives seeing perhaps a little more what the user might get out of it, what your organization might get out of it. I am David Scott Norton, a man of many hats. Technical manager, I run the UW Collaborative Applications Operations team. I'm a service manager for all of UW's centrally managed Microsoft collaborative applications. I'm Exchange and SharePoint architect, Google Apps administrator, and enterprise load balancing service manager. So just a few things. Background is I've been working with SharePoint since 2001 and was actually involved with a project to deliver Office over the web as in partnership with Citrix from Microsoft in 1999. Little early adoption. And I'll hand it over here to Gregory Frick.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, thank you. My name is Greg Frick. I'm with the University of Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
That's where I did go to college. So, but I'm with UW, and I am the service option lead for SharePoint at the UW. We've recently rolled out Office 365, so that's one of the hats. I don't have nearly as many hats as David, which I'm grateful for. And so prior to joining UWIT, so University of Washington IT, Academic and Collaborative Applications, I worked for the School of Medicine, Department of Radiology, so surrounded pretty closely with people that were concerned about things like HIPAA. And I built their intranet on SharePoint 2010. I'm also the president of the Puget Sound SharePoint User Group, so if you're ever in the Seattle area, if you're ever in the Bellevue area, on the third Thursday of the month, please come on by. We have a great SharePint after our meetings. I'm at the C-Star down below, and it's a great group of people, and it's a warm and friendly place. So David and I were brainstorming on how to make this presentation sort of compelling, and we thought, well, what does Oprah do? Well, what she does is she gives away a car. So, you know, she says, people reach under your seat, and, you know, somebody wins a car, and we're with the state, and so we didn't nearly have that budget, but... And now I'm going to just put that aside for a second and say Dubs is our mascot. Dubs is a real husky. So Dubs, you can actually book Dubs for events. And Dubs actually has a blog. And we wanted to give you a little bit of something for the University of Washington. So three people in the audience have something taped under their chairs. And obviously, and you probably know who you are because I was not quiet. I did not know how to do that quietly.
So,
yeah, you got to reach behind because like.
So it's going to be a bit of a hunt, I guess. Wow, that was that's pretty good odds right there.
So yeah, you're welcome. So that's a baby Dubs. Isn't that nice?
Aww. Yeah. So. So a little bit of what we're going to try to do, we're going to tell you about our organizational structure and kind of how we're crafting ourselves to go forward and kind of just the environment we're dealing with, because everybody is going to have their adoption follow in line with however their organization works. The scope and scale of the university, our trajectory to the cloud, our strategies and goals for the OneDrive for Business deployment, as well as some key lessons learned, and finally, some demonstrations of OneDrive for Business and some things that that Greg's figured out how to deconstruct it and really make it make sense to users or try to help it make sense to users. So we have two disclaimers. Whenever you hear us say something is wrong with the product or there's an issue, just remember that's when we last checked. Just insert that in your head because it's a very dynamic environment. You don't get a lot of change notifications. And so you can often think something is still not functioning or not as you want it to be, and it got corrected. So you're constantly learning. Your mileage may vary. I mean, we're a very specific type of organization. We have a lot of politics, a lot of organizational change, a lot of different things that I can't really, would not have enough time to cover. So obviously, you'll have to take things with a grain of salt. So my team is Academic and Collaborative Applications Operations, almost as big a mouthful as, well, actually, it is a bigger mouthful than SkyDrive, OneDrive for Business. So you think I would be very good at rattling those off at this point. It's a brand new team. We're trying to combine what the best practices of DevOps, CloudOps, trying to figure out what that means as we go forward, as we move away from server infrastructure into the world. We concentrate not just on the operations of collaborative apps, but actually doing operations in a collaborative aspect. You'll see from our org structure that we're full of dotted lines, maybe not even a dotted line. We just have somebody else we need stuff from, or that needs stuff from us. I have a quality assurance team, which does the in-house application deployments, release management, things like that. The collaborative application engineers from Microsoft, so Greg, Alex Drabinski, a fantastic Exchange architect, and enterprise load balancing service. That team sits inside the academic collaborative applications group, which is responsible for all the email systems, cloud-based systems like Google Apps, the Microsoft stack, Canvas learning management system, lecture capture, Canvas portal, a whole host of researchers actually trying to prove the pedagogy of these things. And also a whole bunch of development of UW-specific mobile apps like Space Scout lets students find spaces to study on campus. So that sits inside academic services, which is classroom support services, audiovisual, also event planning for the university, as well as the accessible technology, who works directly with people with needs, but also helps drive the culture of the U to make things more and more accessible. They're an important resource for us as we're talking to external vendors about making their products easier for everybody to use. Student program, which is the information systems, and of course, learning technologies, which is our student help desk and is specifically tasked with an instructional learning specialist and anything based on academics. So when a professor needs a help in the classroom, they're really the go-to person, or a student needs help, that's where they go for kind of academic stuff. Inside academic service sits inside University of Washington IT. Includes network data telecom, which is a ginormous network spanning the globe, from undersea cables to pretty much most of the schools in Washington State. And then we have computing infrastructure, which also has identity and access management in it. So these are the folks that manage our ADFS infrastructure, our AD infrastructure, help develop Shibboleth. There's a team in there. And customer service and support, this is kind of the general stuff. This is who our Office 365 users primarily call when they're having problems with a particular feature. This is their help desk. If they're having problems using it in the classroom or using it in class, they'd go to the help desk with the learning side. And then we have information management, DBAs, all that big data stuff we need, and 1,000 other CISO offices, IT services, strategy, all that business and finance and internal stuff. Then up in University of Washington, we of course got the academic units, branch campuses. We have the registrar who's responsible for the student records. So we run the systems that have all the student records, but they're actually responsible for them. Same thing, we often have systems that have to comply with HIPAA or providing HIPAA-related services to UW Medicine, but they are responsible for it. So, really interesting. Okay, our path to Office 365. So we started pre-2007, Microsoft on the University of Washington campus, close partner in so many ways, but as central deployments go, there were none. It was essentially all deployments, maybe a two dozen Exchange deployments, a dozen or so SharePoint farms, and countless number of SharePoint servers underneath people's desks. So, and then we, in 2008, we rolled out joint efforts across campus, basically a partnership, doing UW Exchange as a recharge service, $8 a month, UW SharePoint, and an office communicator pilot. And we moved about a dozen of those. We collapsed about a dozen of those Exchange deployments, and about half a dozen of the departmental SharePoint servers went away. And many more people joined. Then we started looking to the cloud. That's where we're starting to think about that more and more. So we started with Exchange Labs, pilot for 3,000 alumni. We migrated them away from a third service that we had, which was a separate IMAP email service specifically for alumni, myuw.net, and moved them to either this Exchange Labs and a few people. Also moved to Google Apps because we had people working for Google who, oddly enough, felt necessary to go somewhere else. So new campus agreement. Also got at the same time an all-you-can-eat buffet for the Microsoft services. So we had an explosion of SharePoint farms across the organization. And especially with those things that need customization, some of the really exciting UI work that is done at the University of Washington is done on these smaller deployments. So the cloud era starts, and we really start with this. We changed over and we said, we realized that if we were going to be a premier research institution, we were going to need premier data centers. We already had world premier networks. We know how much work that was. We weren't really looking forward to becoming that same level for data centers because it would be massive amounts of money. So we officially adopted cloud as an official strategy. We deployed Google Apps and Live at EDU across campus for anybody to sign up. Moved all the students off of our legacy mail systems except for those needing HIPAA. So the cloud era, the storm. So we started with Live at EDU. It died. We invested several thousand hours along with Microsoft investigating BPOS. We agreed jointly that that wasn't going to work. Again, due to some of the massive complications in our email infrastructure. So BPOS died. Then we went to Office 365, Wave 14, of course. We started the pilot of that. And we also worked jointly with Microsoft to do Shibboleth and get that working in the product. The problem was the link team wasn't playing, so that was kind of a dead end for us. Wave 14 died off, and we decided to go restart on 15. So here we were working on the 15. Our Exchange Online Hybrid had been our planned deployment. Like most people, we were going to lead with Exchange, and the other products would follow. The problem was we were still waiting for the code that really had our routing technologies. So we have a very complicated routing topology where we have responding for well over a million addresses at a centrally run LDAP forwarding infrastructure. We couldn't take all that load and all that complication of routing with the Exchange until certain things had been put back in the product. While that was stuck, we changed. We decided to lead instead with the OneDrive for Business Pro, SkyDrive Pro at the time, or OneDrive for Business and SkyDrive Pro at the time, and Link. So we enabled that for, we licensed 130,000 users at the beginning of this year. We'll give you some numbers here later in the demonstration. A couple months ago, we got the Exchange Hybrid in place and have begun the pilots. So that's kind of our backlog of where we're still looking to deliver. We're looking to deliver Exchange Online. We still have to get all our on-prem stuff migrated up to the cloud. We're still working on GA, all the automation pieces to get people who can go to a website and request a resource and everything else. Oh, general availability. Good question, GA. Premium plans so that people can purchase those things. Same thing with SharePoint. We're looking to be able to have people purchase those, charge back to departmental budgets, all those sort of automations, and buy 50 and 100 gigabytes quotas. SharePoint online sites, we actually decided to hold off on those until we got some of the governance ideas. So what's really nice about the OneDrive for Business was it's essentially 130,000 private kingdoms. So that's where we went. University of Washington scale. So I'll go through a little bit about our infrastructure and how Office 365 matched up or didn't match up. So we're a Tier 1 research university, a regional medical center, about $5.4 billion last year in revenue, with about 35% of that from patient care. Student population is around 44,000, but the whole community is about 140. We have that many medical people, that many researchers, that many staff. And we have a gigantic network covering the world, as I said. So where it matched up perfectly is it was very easy to deploy 140,000 accounts to Office 365. There are very few other places. I certainly wouldn't have done that on-prem, sent out an email to 130,000 people and just let them go at it. But it was very nice that we had the confidence to do that with Office 365, and at least the rollout and that scale of getting hit with that impact, we saw no problems with that. And that also worked for us because, of course, we have very high bandwidth connections running parts of the internet ourselves. So what doesn't work out so well is not all the feature scale. External sharing is one of them. We've essentially, there's a soft limit of 10,000. There's no good answer on what happens after 10,000, but we do know that 10,000 divided by 140,000 is not enough. And so we've got that limitation. So many of the automation tasks, so if you wanted to cycle through 140,000 site collections with a script, that actually is a scale problem. As well as Project Server Online, we're really excited about, but we're wondering how we divide ourselves into three buckets with 2,000 projects. And this public site feature, kind of the same thing. There's kind of constraints that work very well in smaller businesses, but once you get up to the scale of us, we're 140,000 people, and my guess is we have 180,000 organizations. So the other problem we're having is Office 365 support interactions can be very expensive. So we're having to adopt strategies of what we'll troubleshoot and what we don't. Essentially, one of our number one takeaways, which I'll mention again later, is that we've found that we have to have very competent people on the phones with the Microsoft help. The culture. We've aggressively adopted the cloud. There's a goal, and there's strategy related to adopting the cloud. Again, we don't want to build those data centers. We're very distributed. We're very decentralized. And oddly enough, that really plays in our favor on the cloud as a central offering, because what happens is those smaller IT departments basically get tired of herding the cats as well and kick it up one. And likewise, we've kicked it over to Microsoft for some of that. And they have genuine conflicting needs. They want free at any cost, which means they want it in their rate. They don't want to see a new bill. And they don't care how many man hours it takes to not pay a bill. And we have extremely porous borders, which means basically organization boundaries mean nothing. And very strong ties between the work people do, their technology, their devices, their research, and their personal identity. And that's something that you don't often see in other cultures, which is if you take away one of their technologies, you in a sense have insulted them. That's very key in some of our problems. Where it matched. Like I said, we really depended on the cloud, and we feel like Microsoft got it. We felt like they got it so much, and we were so in line that Steve Ballmer actually came to the UW to announce his all-in strategy. The OneDrive for listeners, like I said, allowed 140,000 collection admins to run their own kingdoms. So what better? And though challenging, it's a very highly configurable platform for each individual user. There's tremendous things they can do in the OneDrive for Business that Greg will go into. And the support and delivery of the A2, E2 feature set could easily be provided through the central funding, which was really nice. Also, Link itself scales to meetings well beyond Google Hangouts and start to get to those classroom sizes we need. So where it didn't work so well was Office 365 doesn't handle affiliation and sub-organizations real well. You pretty much have to be one UW. And so if your culture is tied or your identity is tied to a department of pottery, .edu, the truth is you have to be at uw.edu in this environment or go have your own tenant. The spread of tenants is something we definitely want to not encourage, but that is kind of the rule. We have a lack of federated access and management that creates a lot of friction between us and when we're working with other universities or colleagues out in industry. So that's a real issue. So we've had to make up for it with account management, where we can get accounts for people outside our organization. Microsoft routinely uses language like OneDrive for Business. I'm sorry, for Business is alienates and strikes some of our people as off. I think education's the minority in that, but there's definitely a strong problem with that, or a strong current against it. And also, we have many of our population, many of our populations, well over 40% of them are Apple users. So whenever those feature sets don't work, they feel kind of rejected out, and they lash out. So we also have a great deal of regulation to deal with. HIPAA controls the release of medical data. FERPA controls the release of academic data. And ITAR controls the release of weaponized thoughts. So pretty much we have tremendous amounts of research from encryption and computer science to medical to military industrial that can't go off shores. So fortunately, we give the BAA through with Microsoft for Office 365, which covers us for HIPAA, and we feel like we were able to negotiate a very good contract that met our security risk profile. Same thing, great FERPA protections. We are not on an ITAR tenant, but we tell our people with ITAR data, don't put anything up there. Microsoft tells us that they're not going to move data out of their US data centers, but they won't sign something that says it absolutely won't happen like they will for the government vertical. So our confidence is high that our risk is low, which is we don't feel that it's very likely highly trained ITAR people will put their data up there, and we feel like Microsoft is not likely to have it off the border, out of our border, and if it happens, they should understand the business of cleanup enough to make it happen. So, which gets me to the spill response. That's the key factor with all of these. It's not that it's a system that protects you from problems. It's all about kind of reducing those liabilities around the spills, and especially with the HIPAA, reducing the fine levels. So we do have some major issues, or some issues that have to be addressed when we're talking about Office 365, and especially our HIPAA compliance. Which is that Microsoft often enables non-protected, non-compliant features by default. So things like the preview features and apps in the Office on the Exchange web access. Microsoft support has often made requests that violate their own policies and procedures. You have to know to push back. You have to have smart people on your side that say no. And to be fair, they take that very seriously. So once reported, we get a steady march of phone calls up the chain asking us what happened, but it still does happen. And so when they ask for screenshots, you have to know, does that screenshot have patient data on it? You don't give them the screenshot. Many checkboxes in Office 365 null and void your contracts, and that's still a problem. You know, the BlackBerry servers, sometimes licensing, preview features, things like that. And still, right now, for compliance, we have to use third-party products like ShareGate to kind of collect the records out of OneDrive for business for our kind of information requests. So our goals for OneDrive for Business were a couple. One is that we were really, really having problems with people using services without a BAA, Dropbox, and so forth. To dial those in, we did not have an answer. This is a cloud world. We weren't delivering one. This became very pressing. So having a HIPAA-compliant file sharing solution that's a modern one was an enormous, enormous, enormous win, which is one of the main reasons we led with OneDrive for Business and why it is a success I think will continue to be. And also provide more secure and scalable file share solutions, leveraging cloud economics, provide a free solution to faculty and staff. It's not like it doesn't cost us anything to run, but they don't see a bill. And of course, modern file sharing processes. We got some surprises along the way. I think because you kind of hear the marketing, you hear it's just simple file share sync. Well, surprise, it's complete SharePoint Online. Whether you want it or not, it's SharePoint Online. OneDrive for Business is also Exchange Online, whether you want it or not. There's a feature called Site Mailboxes. Anybody with their My Sites can create up to 2,000 email addresses at just a touch of a button, which is exciting. SharePoint Online doesn't always provide technical constraints for licensing constraints. And so that is definitely something we're grappling with, is what do you do in the face of that? Things we knew, guessed right. We thought adoption would grow organically and that would buffer the support load. That's happened. Although we have a support load, it's not overwhelming for the very small team handling it. People are finding uses we never thought of. Greg will go over a few. And co-authoring is a huge boost to productivity. Key configuration items, this kind of goes back to, you know, those things we learned. Negotiate your BAA that fits your risk profile. It took about a year for us of I don't know how much time from the lawyers, but it worked out for that two-page agreement. We also disabled a bunch of non-BAA-friendly items, like Microsoft Apps Marketplace, disabled SharePoint Online preview features. Outlook Web Access has a bunch of default apps that send data to third-party sources. Didn't touch the BlackBerry server, and don't touch licensing in the admin portal. We highly recommend, this is critical, I think, to keeping control of your data, which is use, even if you're doing SharePoint Online only, if you're doing OneDrive for Business only, because of the site mailbox, I still recommend to you highly to do hybrid exchange so that your mail flows through your on-prem servers. So the biggest current pain points, poor Apple user support. That's definitely hurting us with the population we have and kind of that cultural aspect. There's a very confusing support metrics of what browser can do what thing, or what version of Office installed can do what thing. That's so complex that essentially it feels random and broken to users, and so we're still finding ways to educate them on that or make it simpler. Quite frankly, we are looking forward to the day that sync works, but there's a lot of issues with it at the moment, not the least of which is it's in your control to decide what type of files sync up to Office 365, and we have not yet decided on EXE what the security implications of that are. So odd things don't get moved, and people wonder why. So managing your file types. Also, once past the view edit scenario, which works great. In OneDrive for Business, the view edit scenario works great. But after that, permissions are SharePoint, and thus confusing. We're still struggling with how to deal with explaining turning on features and apps. and of course, when Microsoft Marketing conflicts with our user's identity. So quick advice, don't underestimate the need for legal advice. And I think that's true not only with your risk, but also with what licensing means to you, especially when you get into those things that aren't technically constrained. Don't underestimate the backlash from communities if either your support, the platform support, marketing isolates them, makes them feel targeted, because if a business process then comes down that uses this, their immediate reaction is to not want to participate. And so you have to be conscious of that and actually help users talk about their business processes in a way that engages people and doesn't talk about the technology. All right. Hand this over to Greg.
I've been looking at David using the clicker, and I was wanting clicker power. Does this thing have a laser? Is it? Yeah, look at that. All powerful. So thanks for coming. As I was walking over here in the bright sunshine after taking a little break, and I'm from Seattle, I'm thinking, wow, I would really like to be out in the sun. And then I also looked at the schedule, and there's also like three sessions that I'd love to attend right now. So there's three good sessions. So I'm really grateful that you're here. So thank you for coming. The intention here was to talk a little bit about the practical aspects of like rolling it out. So what did we communicate to our users? What are some of the questions that came up that our users had? Also, you know, in hindsight, we feel pretty smart, because we forked our deployment, as David mentioned in one of those slides. Instead of leading with Exchange and Office 365 and the whole suite, we went with OneDrive Pro and Link out of the gate. So that felt it was a separate thing, and then Microsoft followed us, right, Mark? Yeah. I've gone to a couple of OneDrive Pro sessions here at the conference. Has anybody else? Are there some features that you're pretty excited about? Things that you've seen? I like the site folders. I want to learn a little bit more about that, but you know, it's like it shows, I think it's a direct link to content that's being shared with you in other team sites, which is a good segue to some of the stuff that I'll demonstrate and show you. And what else was I going to say? I had a few other clever things to say. You know, when I do the MC of the Puget Sound SharePoint user group, I've been doing it for so long, I'm just up there, I'm talking to all my friends, and I was so excited about coming here and talking at the SharePoint user conference, so I feel like, can we just pretend where this is a Puget Sound SharePoint user group meeting? Anyway, so rolling out OneDrive for business. At the time, it was SkyDrive Pro. And some of the conversations that ensued, these are things that just would come up. It's like, the general one, what is it? SkyDrive Pro. Or they already had a SkyDrive account, so then you're explaining the difference between SkyDrive and SkyDrive Pro. And then people were excited about it, and this actually speaks to, you know, the power of what SharePoint can do, because a lot of people were saying, well, when can we have full SharePoint? And I would have to explain that it was full SharePoint. It really, really is full SharePoint. And it doesn't actually feel like full. How many of you are using OneDrive Pro right now? Does it feel like full SharePoint when you're using it? No. Why not? Okay, anybody else? I'm gonna shut this guy up. No, he's a ringer, by the way. He's from the University of Washington. So John's the IT manager for the School of Medicine Department of Radiology, where I used to work, so where I cut my teeth at the UW. Any other reasons why it doesn't exactly feel like full SharePoint? That's kind of the primary one, is that you land on it and it shows your documents. It's not really a home page. If you share something with somebody, they can go right to another file, but they can't really go to kind of a site that has a calendar and things like that. So I wanted to try to address some of those things in rolling it out. So I already have OneDrive, and then the conversation would be, I already have OneDrive. And I'd say, well, I know you already have OneDrive. I'm talking about OneDrive for business. So conversations like that would happen. And when I say conversations like that, To me, it means, as in my role at the UW, I want to find a way to do the elevator pitch. I want to do the value add to them. I have a very short window of time to explain how this is relevant to them. I want to what value it offers to them. So when I say conversation, I mean it also means to be reflected in our internal websites and our internal communications so that people can exchange these ideas. So some of the challenges would be, well, I could explain it by license and service, right? So I could actually go and say, well, you know, OneDrive Pro is part of our SharePoint Online, which is included in our Office 365 license. But that really wouldn't be practical, actionable information for our users, right? They wouldn't leave that conversation feeling very enlightened. And they wouldn't have any marching orders. They wouldn't know what to do next, right? So I could describe it by comparing it to a SharePoint 2010 My Site. Have you guys used 2010 My Sites? So you know it's kind of the same, right? It's got a My Content link, My Profile, and then there's kind of news feeds. So there's a similar thing. But if you explain it in comparison to a 2010 My Site, that assumes that the person you're talking to has that frame of reference. And in the past, as excited as I've been about the personal features in the My Sites, the adoption rate hasn't been that high in a lot of organizations, in the organizations that I've been in. So come back to this point too, but one of the things is someone who's taught SharePoint for years and has also deployed SharePoint and built the farm for radiology, the My Sites was always the last thing you paid attention to, wasn't it? Like if you're like building it out, like the real SharePoint was the other sites and then there was a My Site. So you probably didn't even know all of the settings and features and functions of a My Site in 2010. And so that's an important point. I think we've gotten a big benefit by forking and going with OneDrive Pro first, is that we kind of dug deeper into OneDrive Pro and figured out how we could use it more effectively. I could also describe it by the enhancements over 2010. So one of the big enhancements is the sync client. So the ability for people to have their files wherever they are, a local copy, loading quickly, independent of network speed at the time because they've got a local cached copy, is very cool. The 2013 native social tools are more powerful than what we had in 2010. Not even to mention Yammer, but just what was built into SharePoint 2013 natively. So the newsfeed page, the tagging features, and things like that. The storage capacity is outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. Didn't people used to walk around with like thumb drives on their neck, right? And keychains and all kinds of stuff. I don't see that anymore. I mean, why would you? You know, if you have a network connection, you can go to the cloud, and 25 gigabytes of storage is massive. And it saves us from having to provision that in our data centers. And you heard David describe the complexity of our environment, so you know that we have to negotiate, and this is probably true. Are you from higher ed, or some of you from higher ed? So you know internally, when you want a service, you can't just necessarily always pull the trigger. You sometimes have to then ask someone in another department, and they come back with their constraints, and they ask for their budget number. And a lot of times you just want to act, and you can't. So getting 25 gigs of storage capacity for 44,000 students would be an awfully big budget item for us to go and sell. So the fact that we can use that is a pretty huge enhancement. But even if I were to describe it as enhancements over 2010, I'm still stuck in the position that they didn't know 2010. You know, they didn't really have a firm grip on 2010. I'd end up having to describe it with competing products, which might have sync capabilities or something like that. One of my favorites is this last point. And as a SharePoint instructor, I love SharePoint, but one of the things is I would always go and open Word, write a file, write, file, save. Oh no, what do I do now? It wouldn't go right into SharePoint. Now sometimes you could add it to your SharePoint sites and sometimes it would show up in your favorites. But you know what a lot of users would do? Anybody want to tell me? I know you know. What? They would save it to their desktop and then open up SharePoint and then upload it. And it kind of undermines your ability to say SharePoint kicks butt, right? Because they have to do this multi-step process just to get a file in it. I love that with Office 365, SharePoint Online, and certainly OneDrive Pro, that I can open Word, write a document, and just save it right into OneDrive Pro. It's an awesome feature. And it's simple too, right? It's easy to overlook, but that's the kind of thing. I was thinking about this too. I was thinking about Davis and White. Anybody watch the Olympics? Anybody get hooked in the Davis and White story? Oh, beautiful young people. They won the gold medal. They've been skating together for 17 years, right? It's like an ideal collaboration picture. I was gonna try to work it into the presentation, but I couldn't, but now I am. But anyway, it's like a perfect collaboration example, right? Because senior management put them together. They said you should collaborate and produce something of value. Well, in their case, senior management was their mothers, right? And they put them on the ice. And the first time they slipped on the ice, did they say, oh, this technology is no good. I'm not going to try it again. No, they kept skating. And they did this for 17 years, and they won a gold medal. And so what we see in the tech sector a lot of times is people try something, especially a busy faculty member, and they slip on the ice. Boom. And they say, wow, that ice is hard. And they don't try it again. And they do the thing that they used to do. Maybe it's not as good, but they don't at least slip on the ice. So I worked in my Davis and White. Yay. That was on my checklist. So I could describe it with links. And that's what I first did, is I wanted to go to these different links. So I went to office.microsoft.com, by the way. The Office document tech team does a great job on writing a lot of documentation, right? So we regularly integrate that resource into trying to explain to someone about a document library or about something. But when they describe OneDrive for Business, you know what the first sentence says? OneDrive for Business is a personal document library. So that's a blind man grabbing the tail of an elephant. On the ShareGate site, so Benjamin Nealon, I think is how you say his last name, he describes all the components well, but he says that SkyDrive Pro is the sync client. That's what SkyDrive Pro is. The rest of it's just my site. So he's grabbing another part of the elephant. CIO Magazine actually did a pretty good job of laying out the components. And then this last link is just our own internal website. We needed to come up with a way to communicate it to our users. So I didn't find an explanation that kind of described the whole elephant. So now the next slide. I couldn't take out to save my life. But basically, the sync client is based on technology that Microsoft has been developing and fine-tuning for a while. It's Groove. So if you open it up and look at the properties of the executable, you'll see that it's groovy. It's Groove. And it was digging into it at that level was part of my effort to deconstruct and demystify OneDrive Professional so I could explain it to my users in a way that they could take advantage of it. So this is where I'm going to start going into a little bit of demonstration. So I want to describe it as a SharePoint site to people in a hands-on way. You know, why is it a SharePoint site? How do you know that it's a SharePoint site? How can I prove it to people that it's a SharePoint site? So if it was a site, I would need to be able to navigate to someone else's site. By the way, can we take a quick poll of it? Which hashtag do you like better? ODB4B? Or 1D for biz. So how do you navigate to someone else's Office OneDrive? I got myself confused now. I was expecting thunderous applause and I was let down, so I just have to recover. Yeah! Oh, thank you. So if it really was a site, you could just get a URL and go right to it, right? So, and then if it was a site, you could manage site settings. And if you're a site collection administrator, site collection settings. So I want to just answer those questions for you in a demonstration. And then I'll come back to things like, how much should you change it? You know, can you change it? And how much should you change it? So let's see how I'll do this here. Show the taskbar, and let's go.
Which way does it go? Oh, whew.
It had to go like through a doorway to get over to the other monitor. So this is what happens when I land on it, and it seems like most of our users just ignore this page and click away, which is a shame because I've tried to get people to start posting little micro blog threads here. So up at the top, there's this navigation bar, which will be your sort of central navigation for OneDrive for Business. And if you go to a OneDrive site, so when I go to my OneDrive site, what I'll see is my I'll see some links on the left, which help me to find content, so shared with me, followed documents. And then I'll also see recent documents. I'll see my files. So how do I know it's a SharePoint site? Well, I should be able to navigate to someone else's SharePoint site, which is one of the things I was saying. So if we look up here at the top, right there, and I'll just move my cursor out of the way, and we'll zoom in a little bit. If we look up there, we'll see that the address says personal, which if anybody who's got administrative responsibility, that's a managed path. And then it says my NetID account, my account name, and then a naming convention for our university. So gdfrick_uw_edu, which means if I know someone's account name, which is essentially their email address, I should be able to navigate to their OneDrive for Business site. So to demonstrate that, I would just go. And so this was also part of deconstructing it. The URLs have, I forget what the name of the feature is, but you can turn it off. I haven't, but there's an optimization feature for downloading pages, and it sticks the pound sign and some other stuff to the layouts directory in your URL. But when I communicate URLs to people, I don't include that stuff. The URLs still work, and I don't want to, the URLs are too long, and they're confusing to people with a lot of that stuff in it. So let's just take this URL and copy it, and I'll open another tab over here. And I'll paste it in, and I'll backspace over this, and I'll go to a test account, otest 021_uw_edu. Now, will that work? That won't actually work. It will sort of work. It will eventually work, but it's not what I wanted to demonstrate. It won't take them to their OneDrive for Business site. It'll actually take them to their profile. So I actually have to put the documents library in the URL. So I just have to type in documents. And if I do that, I actually take you to C. Garfield, Chester Garfield's site. By the way, that's a husky in a spacesuit. That's because that's the logo for our application Space Scout, which our team developed to help students find study spaces. So you can go to spacedout.org maybe and look at it. I don't know the URL. I forget it right now. But this is Chester Garfield's or OTest 21 site. I can see all the documents that are shared with me. I can see their navigation on the left, and I can see this top navigation. Some of the mistakes I made when I was exploring it early is I'd say, well, I want to look at Chester Garfield's sites, and I'd click there. Well, those are my sites. They're not Chester Garfield's. That blue bar is in the context of me. Whoa. That blue bar is in the context of me. And this navigation on the left is also in the context of this one. It's actually in the context of Chester Garfield. So people that Chester Garfield follows, documents, and so forth. And that's how you can actually navigate to someone else's site. So that's one of the questions that I wanted to be able to answer for people. You could put in the URL. Now, I could just follow this site. Actually, I can't follow this site, it looks like. You'll see in a minute why that's not too important to me, but I just am surprised I don't see the little follow star here on this site, because it's not a site, it's their OneDrive for Business documents library. So now you can manage site settings and stuff with a little cog on the top. So I'm in my documents library, but that's the best homepage I've got for OneDrive for Business. So I can go into the little cog at the top, and I can go and I can look at site settings, or I can look at site contents. If I look at site contents, I'll see all the apps or lists and libraries that are created in this site. And if I scroll down, I can see the subsites, the sites right under this site. And I can also see, I have the ability to create a new subsite underneath this site. So now, when I was first experimenting with OneDrive for Business, I created a library here. And what I was surprised to find out, and I probably shouldn't have been too surprised, was the default permissions on a OneDrive for Business site. We don't have external sharing on, so everybody is everyone except external users. So I was surprised to find out when I created a document library here that everyone at the University of Washington had read access to it. So I would want to have a solution for my users that would address that, so they could confidently create a secure place to collaborate with a team. It could be a club, it could be a study group, things like that. So So I wanted to address that. And can I configure this like a regular SharePoint site? Well, I don't know, can I? I go into site settings, and it has all of the features that you'd see on any site settings menu on any SharePoint site. You'll also see that it has all of the site collection administration settings. So every one of the people at University of Washington that has logged in and created a profile and created a OneDrive for Business site is a site collection administrator. They have full control over that top-level site and anything underneath it. So that's how I know it's a site. So now what do I do, right? So how do I manage permissions for this site? Have any of you gone this far on your OneDrive for Business? Have you looked at these things? Yes, you have. Anybody else? Yes. So did you try to figure out a strategy to address it? How would you communicate it? Because there's something you could do. One thing you could do to your users, you could say, don't ever look under here. Don't look under here at all. And I would argue that wouldn't really work. And in some cases, that would make people look under there, right? So I knew that wouldn't work. So, but what I do ultimately say is, don't mess with the way Microsoft set this up. Microsoft needed a way to provide a really easy-to-use way for people to store personal documents, to share those documents, and OneDrive for Business does that. I mean, if you look at the sharing interface, it's so simple, right? Just click on the ellipses, share it with someone, you're done. You don't have to do a lot of training. People could start using this right away. So our recommendation is kind of morphed to, don't mess with what Microsoft did at the top level site. Use it for what it's designed to use it for. But if you have needs that go beyond those needs, this is what I think you should do. So let's see. Shift F5. So I needed a slide to tell you that. This is what I'm going to show you, right? So it was the fade-in. I didn't want you to lose that. You paid a lot for this conference. I shouldn't shortchange you on those fades. So what I would recommend you do is you create a subsite underneath your top-level site. You don't inherit permissions. How many of you don't know what I'm talking about when I say this stuff? You don't inherit permissions from the parent site. Does that sound like foreign words? Are you guys good with that? Okay. I worry about that because when I'm communicating with my users, because I start to use the term site collection and site, and I don't want people to get alienated. I want to try to find ways with the UW community to use it in a way. Not to talk down to people, because the people at UW are super smart, and they start pushing the envelope on these things right away, but I want to find an effective way of communicating. So don't inherit permissions from the parent site, because if you do, there's anything you create underneath it, everybody except external users can read. Right, so we don't want to inherit permissions. We want to start the navigation at that subsite level. So one of the challenges is your OneDrive for Business, there's no top nav, there's no left nav. If you wanted to put a little web part on the page that says, hi, welcome to this site, you can look here for this and do this for this, and these are the latest happenings, you couldn't really do that because you don't have a traditional home page. So use navigation on that second site. Create SharePoint security groups. And I don't think there's anything wrong if you don't know all your security groups to use the tried and true Microsoft convention of naming groups when you create a new site. What's that? What is it? Yeah, here we go, right? Site name, space, visitors, site name, space, owners, site name, space, members, where visitors can read, members can contribute, and owners have full control of that site. So I want you to create those groups. Even if you don't know of any other groups, create those. You may create other groups, researchers, something like that, but you can start there. I wanted everybody except external users to view this site, because I wanted to be able to, if I was working with teams of people, I wanted them to come to my portal, and then they could see what they had permissions to view. And it wouldn't be confusing. They could follow my portal site. I'm calling it a portal, right? Greg's portal. They could follow my portal site. So it would always show up on their site's link as a followed site, and then if they had access to two or three of my subsites, they could get to all of them. Just go to the portal site, they'd see the navigation there. So let's take a look at that. So how are we doing so far? Does that make sense? Anybody do a similar thing or run into the same sort of stuff? you're here for something. Yes. Yes. We are not. Okay. And I wouldn't be able to answer those questions. But I'm looking forward to answering those questions. Because because the idea of actually running an on-prem for specific purposes and then using OneDrive for business for the person, that's pretty darn compelling, isn't it? I mean, 25 gig of storage, it's going to increase, I'm pretty sure it's going to increase the lifespan of, like, operations people, right? That many less servers to manage and monitor, it's actually going to be, it's a public health issue. So there's my argument. No, but it's just going to make life a lot better and more effective and efficient for us. So and so now you just gave me something to ponder. Thank you. Because so I'm saying, oh, go to sites, follow sites, and you'll see that if you go to sites, you can follow Greg's portal, and if you follow, so now this is me, and every site you create, by the way, ends up being one of your followed sites. So if you don't want it to be there, unfollow it. But if you go to my portal, what you'll see that I've done is I've just, and I did this sort of for tutorial purposes, so I say, here's Greg's portal, Greg's gateway, Greg's entranceway, Greg's landing page, whatever you want, portal was the word I used. And I described where it's located, and then I described the permissions for the site because I'm using the site for tutorial purposes. And I even go down to the point of these little asterisks, right, to explain in greater detail because I know people, some people like the greater detail, some people don't. So I try not to explain it in line. And then you'll see that I have navigation across the top, and I have left navigation. And so that's the recommendation. Now, if you wanted to create a subsite under here, you could go ahead and do that. You can just go here and you go to site contents. You can scroll all down here and create a new subsite. And you'll just do SPC demo. Control A, Control C, Control V. Now, if I were working with a group of people and I wanted to make this secure, this is what I was talking about. I would use unique permissions, which means don't inherit permissions from the parent site. Microsoft has always had a very handy feature built in when you do this, is that you're then prompted for who do you want to give access to, right? So when you select use unique permissions, Microsoft throws up a page that says visitors, members, owners, and you get to start your permissions all over again. And you also can choose existing groups. So if I wanted everyone except external users to continue to have read access, I would just let the visitors group at the parent site have access. Does that make sense, right? So create that site. And I meant to do yes here. So I meant to say use the top link bar from the parent site. So now all my hierarchy of sites is going to have this long menu navigation here. And if I wanted to allow the same people to have access to it, I could say Greg's portal's visitors can also read this site, and then I would add you guys in here and click OK. So now if a user goes to, now I didn't inherit the navigation, so I'm going to use the back button. And now I'll go to sites. And I think if I go to Greg's portal, SPC demo is here. So I wanted to inherit that down so people land on the portal, they can navigate up and down the tree of sites and so forth. So that may be a little complicated for some people. I have to say sites and site collections and I have to say permissions. So we kind of get into some tactics on that. Like, how do you communicate this information? We could do a video. Yeah, we could do that. So, and that's the second bullet here. Users want to share videos, and then you run into this whole SharePoint support thing, which is where you say, well, you should put your videos in an asset library. And then they go to create an asset library, and there isn't an asset library choice. So what do? So it's on the slide. You could have just cheated. But anyway, you just have to turn on a feature. And so in SharePoint, whenever you think you should be able to do something and you can't, it's possible, probable even, that a feature hasn't been activated. So that's always a good place to start. So that is one of the tactics. I went into the, I created an assets library on my portal, and then I went and I just created a Camtasia video on how to create subsites in SkyDrive Pro, and I shared that video out. So I did a video tutorial, it's 8 minutes long, on how to do what I just showed you how to do. Another one of the tactics was to blog. And so I started using the blog right away, and I'm a Snagit addict. Anybody use Snagit? There we go. I love Snagit. I like saying it. I like using it. Anyway, I like drawing circles on things. But anyway, I found that when you're trying to write instructions, you need pictures, because if you try to describe screen artifacts in words, your sentences are unreadable, right? So click the you know, my thing in SharePoint 2010, and it still applies in some places in 2013, is click the tiny triangle. You know, that was like the advice that you give to people, right? They can't do something, click the tiny triangle. Yeah, I can't see the triangle. Oh, move your mouse around until you see the triangle. You know, that would be another thing. So now it's ellipses. Click the ellipses. But so basically describing in detail a tutorial on how to create groups in SkyDrive Pro. So this goes through the instructions on how to create those security groups. So between the video on creating subsites and this post on how to create groups, a user can create a subsite, not inherit permissions. Because what I noticed is users were going ahead and doing this, and then when I'd go into search, and I would periodically just go search and then refine it on job title, right, student. So I'd refine it on junior, freshman, senior, and I'd see search hits for how many juniors, freshmen, seniors, graduate students had been setting up SkyDrive Pro sites. I would sometimes also, I searched for penguins, right? I think it was penguins. And I started to see content that wasn't really meant to be shared. And what it was someone who was pushing the envelope with OneDrive for Business. They were doing something else, and they didn't realize that what they were sharing was actually visible to everybody at the university. So I emailed them and told them and pointed them to my links. But the idea was try to be proactive about this so you can give them some guidance out of the gate. So isn't that beautiful? Anyways, I'm giving myself credit here. And then I also went back and used I went back and wrote something for our main IT support page, because we have a group service that allows you to create Active Directory groups that are used throughout the university for other services. So if a department or team already uses those, like in radiology, then why not leverage those groups? So I wrote another piece of documentation on how to use those groups in OneDrive Pro for Business, because they're synchronized to the cloud. All of our non-privacy protected groups, meaning all of the groups that don't allow anybody to see membership, are synchronized to the cloud, and you can use those to secure your OneDrive for Business resources. So I continue to write out blogs on creating the assets library, adding photos to link, but that's been part of the tactics has been a user group at the University of Washington, so UW SharePoint SIG special interest group. So I'll be meeting with them on Friday to tell them all about the conference. And we meet every 2 weeks. You know, part of it was just I wanted an excuse to go to the 22nd floor of the tower, which has beautiful views of the campus. It used to be the executive suites for an insurance company. And so we meet there with our bagged lunches, feeling like fat cats. And we talk about SharePoint for an hour or so. And it's a great way to share ideas. And a lot of times what comes up is people actually bring up their business problems, and then other people that have been working with SharePoint volunteer their solutions. And I've already seen people implement things just by having a forum where they can meet and talk. And I think social networking is great. I'm also a believer in face-to-face. I think that analog connection that happens, we look at each other, make some eye contact, remember what our voices sound like, means a lot. So combine your efforts. Don't just try to make it all on computer. Obviously, for scale, you need to use documentation and blogs. But if you could actually make contact with people and help people form relationships, I think you're going to benefit from that. So some of the gotchas we encountered. I started to blog immediately, and then someone followed my blog, and I was following them. And in my newsfeed, it said, Jen is following blog. And then I realized that every blog created on OneDrive for Business is called blog. So if Jen was following three blogs, it'd be like Jen is following blog, and then the next day Jen is following blog, and the next day Jen is following blog. So I went in there and I said, oh, I know what I can do is I can go into the blog and change the name of the site. I can change the title of the site. I went in there and I called mine Greg's blog. So now if someone follows my blog, they're following Greg's blog. But one of the gotchas was on that same page, you can also change the URL. And so my friend Jen did that exactly. She went in there and she called it Jen's blog, and then she changed the URL to JH blog for Jen Hall blog. Well, suddenly when you went to her profile page, the link was broken because the links on the newsfeed page are hardwired. The blog link depends on the URL being blog. So that was a gotcha that we ran into. It's a training issue. If you want to support blogs, yes. No, if I followed her blog when it was blog, and then she changed the URL and the name, then it broke the followed link. Because the followed links, I would have had to unfollow her site and then refollow her site. So this last bullet here says publishing infrastructure, it turns on this thing called limited access permission user mode. Well, one of the things that I really like about OneDrive for Business is the fact that it's so easy to share content. And one of the things people want to do is they want to create a folder and share the folder with people. And they just keep putting files in that folder. So even if you don't create subsites like I just demonstrated, and you created a folder on your OneDrive for Business, you'd want to share that. Well, when I was trying to solve the Jen problem, I was also still trying to understand OneDrive for Business, so I turned on the publishing infrastructure feature. Right? Has anybody done that? Site collection feature, publishing infrastructure. I wanted to see if it worked, for one thing, because if you use the publishing infrastructure, you can have better navigation, you know, drop-down menus and so forth. But what I was going to do is see if I could create a publishing site called blog, and where the homepage redirected it to Jen's real blog. So mostly it was an academic exercise for me to kind of push the limits and see if I could do that. And it turns out I could do that. But when I turned on the publishing infrastructure, it turned on this feature called limited access user permission lockdown mode. The reason I'm bringing it up at all is because when folder sharing stopped working, I had no idea why. I shared a folder with my teammates, they got the email, they clicked the link, they saw nothing. If I sent them the URL to the document within that folder, they could go to it. They had permissions. I went into the SharePoint tools and I said, do they have permissions? And it said, yes, you have permissions here. So what it is the publishing infrastructure turns on a feature called limited access user permission lockdown mode. And the reason they turned it on is because on publishing sites, you don't want people to be able to traverse directories. You don't want them to be able to go and browse content. You want them to go to publishing sites. You're building a publishing site. So that feature is kind of linked to the publishing feature. There's things like the assets library, which we also covered, but there's other things too, is like when you create a site, you also have to go in there and turn on features for legacy stuff that you would expect. So for instance, if you wanted to create, when you create a site, a lot of times you don't have a very rich selection of types of lists and libraries to create, or apps. So you have to go in and turn on the feature for collaboration lists. Collaboration team lists. I forget the actual name of the feature. But that's the same kind of model. It's like you want people to be able to do something in SharePoint. You know, you can create a workflow in SharePoint. You can create a 2010 workflow in SharePoint 2013. You have to go into a site collection features and turn on the workflow feature. So, you know, those are the kind of gotchas that you have to run into. You say, oh, it's really easy, but then you realize, oh, there's all these dependencies that you have to resolve. We found out the Excel survey doesn't work. So I was very excited about that. I thought that would be a great teaching tool. Faculty could quickly whip up a little survey, get some feedback from students, from online students, that kind of thing. But it didn't work. They got an error message that said it doesn't work in our environment. And the reason it doesn't work is it's tightly bound to external sharing, which we don't have turned on. So as you know, David was mentioning in some of the constraints is this 10,000 sharing number wouldn't work for the UW, so we didn't turn it on, the Excel survey broke. Now, does it get removed from the UI when you turn off the dependency? It doesn't. So basically, it stays in the UI, giving people messages that say, we have to do something. We have limited visibility on things, like there's reports, but they're very, well, actually, I've been working with the support team on it, putting a lot of time into it. They put out some reports that are potentially useful, but they put out reports that don't define anything. So it says site active sites versus inactive sites. You know, when I'm getting all methodical and detail-oriented, I want to know what constitutes active versus inactive. So I wanted to know that. I don't understand why it's not defined, so I have to find out why it's not defined, what it really means. And so I had to kind of, you know, wrestle with Premier support sort of on every one of the reports because I couldn't tell how I could use them until I could clearly understand what they were measuring and how. So we have, you know, kind of weak visibility into OneDrive for Pro, that OneDrive for Business, that's still an issue. If we needed to make a copy of somebody's OneDrive for Business content, we'd actually have to go to the user profile service, make ourselves a site collection administrator of their OneDrive for Business site, and then copy all the content off. We, as administrators, don't have permissions to people's OneDrive for Business sites. If you were on an on-premises SharePoint installation, you'd go to central admin and you'd create a policy on the web app which would say, well, the administrators or even the compliance officers had the ability to read all the content on these sites. And we don't. There's not a very scalable mechanism for us. So we're still working on that. From what I've heard at the conference, Microsoft is aware of some of these features. So they were talking about, you know, OneDrive for Business in the compliance lectures as well. So I'm hopeful that these things will get resolved. But right out of the gate, we have to have workarounds. What we've used is we've bought a tool called ShareGate to be able to copy one whole site collection to another location in the event that we need to do that. Did I have anything else on that one? Yeah. Yeah, no SLA. So anyway, so just a couple of numbers, and I want to leave a minute or two for questions. You might have some. You've been asking a few in line, but let's just see. So we've got 30,000 emails were sent out in the first 99 days, which is when I created this slide. We saw that we had 7,055 active OneDrive for Business sites in the first 99 days. So 8,474 people logged in and created sites or created user profiles. And so that was it was about 1,000 a week when we first announced the email. And we're not selling the service so much, so we're not continuing with marketing campaigns. So we've seen the growth go organically. We're going to also see it driven by the School of Medicine and compliance. What was surprising to me is that in this 1 week that I measured when I created the slide, we had more active OneDrive for Business sites than Google Apps or Google Docs users. And that was super surprising to me because we've been using Google stuff for years and we have 91,000 Gmail accounts under UW. So it's like really surprising that kind of, to me, conveys a sense of pent-up demand for this service. Some solution examples. This is why we need to come up with this proactive way of communicating how you can use OneDrive for Business. Natalie Brockwell she super sharp young woman, used her own initiative. She had a problem for managing scholarships. They had this outdated way of doing it all manually, scanning in a PDF, distributing the PDF. They wanted a better way. Her friend Alex said, hey, use this new thing you guys just rolled out. And without really knowing anything about SharePoint, she just solved it, which to me is extremely promising. You know, it's like that's what makes me excited about SharePoint is that end users, subject matter experts, people that know their departments and business can create solutions, and that's the kind of thing that we'll see more of at the University of Washington. You know, another example would be the charge nurses at the University of Washington Medical Center. I didn't know what a charge nurse was, but there's 22 units. And the charge nurses manage resources, so beds and where other nurses need to be. And they have to update data every 4 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, which is then managed in daily meetings with the patient flow supervisor. So on their own, they came up with a very simple solution. And it's beautiful in its simplicity. They used Excel web app to create a spreadsheet that people could co-author, update their data kind of in real time. And then they could go over that at the patient flow meetings. So they knew that OneDrive for Business was under our BAA and was HIPAA compliant. Everybody's familiar with Excel, so the barrier to entry is pretty low. And so they created one. So that's, to me, another example of an exciting way that we're going to see OneDrive for Business used at the university. So as I mentioned, some of the tactics. Other, you know, continual outreach with different departments is also a part of that. And looking forward, to the next room, huh? So I guess if I were to summarize this, it would be people are going to trip on the carpet when they enter the room, and they're not going to want to try the technology, or they're going to slip on the ice. So you've got to create enough value. But we all know that if someone is going to get value from something, they overcome those obstacles. So one of the lessons is communicate the value to people early. I'm optimistic. I've seen Microsoft step up with things like this technology-enhanced instruction workshop they just did with the School of Medicine, and that's going to generate business, and we'll see more uptake there. And we got 0 seconds for any questions. Any questions? Yes. That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question, and we're facing it now. We want to step in forward some.
Yeah, so yes, we have plans, and that's part of our backlog is working through those. You kind of automate things as you go, and we're still also waiting for Microsoft to provide some of these solutions. Definitely, the compliance offerings coming out with the in-place hold, where you can do things by searches and stuff like that, and the data loss prevention stuff is going to be fantastic for trying to give you the tools to make sure that stuff doesn't disappear. But yes, we'll probably do the same sort of thing we do with Exchange, which is when critical staff leave, their manager gets an email that says, please contact our AA rec and make sure you've retained properly everything that's supposed to be retained from this employee leaving. Students, however, they perhaps are working on stuff that unfortunately is just kind of going to get washed out. And that is kind of one of the issues with the OneDrive for Business is there really isn't an equivalent commercial offering. So I think that will be one of the things that faces some of the students. What do I do when I leave? I've done all these cool things. I kind of liked what I did.
So as I mentioned earlier, we did go with ShareGate. The license was affordable. The user interface is simple. It does give us the ability to take it and clone a site. So we have the technology, the manual technology, to sort of take control of a site, copy all the content to a separate location. So we provisioned another sort of, and David mentioned AA Rec, which is a records request person. So we basically make a copy of it, but the automation part, as David mentioned, is still on a backlog, and it's a big issue.
One of the other things we've done is, one of the other workarounds is creating a shared account, setting up a site under a shared account, and then giving permission from the individuals
who are supposed to have access, and others should have access, but then if one of them leaves, that has to stay. Well, we have Office 365 just going out, but I'm really trying to struggle with how to make it easier about when do you use OneDrive for Business and then request TeamSite and SharePoint, and when to either share your documents or something that everybody's sharing, where you put it, and what to put in your personal OneDrive versus the OneDrive for Business. And
yes. Yeah, and that's unfortunately, that's kind of those governance things that are harder to grow organically. That's why we led for OneDrive for Business, because you didn't have as many of those to answer as you do with sites and team sites. And obviously, once you enter the quota question, you have all this resource allocation and internal stuff. And so that is essentially why we haven't yet released that part of the feature set. So, any question back there? The question is, are we using any multi-factor authentication? We haven't yet implemented. We have those technologies, and we are doing ADFS, basically change SAML implementation of single sign-on. So we have that ability to do that. We haven't done it yet. We also haven't yet done, the obvious win was the multi-factor for administrator. The problem was that also broke all the automation. So we're looking forward. I know, I don't know what's been announced yet from Microsoft, but I know that they're working diligently on making other parts of the stack aware of their multi-factor authentication, and we'll definitely take advantage of that as it comes up. So, well, thank you very much. I think we have to give back the room.
Yeah, but I'd also like to invite anybody that wants to stay in touch. We can exchange email addresses. We can stand at the back of the room. We should just clear off and give the next speaker a chance to get in. But if we're in higher ed, we can exchange email addresses and we can keep the conversation going because there's discoveries all the time, and it is a unique environment. It's not the same as making and selling widgets. So.